Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of 2019 of the Calcio Land Podcast. I'm excited to start a new calendar year. I want to thank all our listeners for your support. It's been outstanding. 2018 was a banner year for our podcast, and I am looking forward to us growing even more thanks to your help and support. So today, you know, the transfer window has started. Serie A's on break. So we're going to cover a lot of transfer talk today. That'll pretty much be the whole podcast. So I'm joined by our great friend, Alex Goldberg, who not only is the co-host, the producer of Calcioland, he is has a high profile within the Chelsea community on Twitter. So I want to talk a little bit about the Pulisic deal first. And don't worry, you Calcio fanatics, we are going to tie it to Serie A pretty quickly. Because one thing that really stood out to me on how this was covered is like the difference in how Dortmund and Roma are perceived. I think there's a very thin line between being called shrewd for how you sell or being dubbed the supermarket, which obviously has a much more negative connotation. But before we get to that discussion, I have to simply ask you, Alex, you're a big Chelsea fan. You and I are based here in the U.S. What was your initial reaction when you saw that the deal was made official? Chelsea buying Pulisic now and leaving him on loan to Dortmund until the end of the season.
Well, yeah, let me work backwards almost. The whole leaving on loan to the end of the season, I loved. I love the fact that he's coming in the summer. He can get a fresh start then. Whenever you kind of make a move of that magnitude, I think it's easier for the player to start new in the summer. And this can apply for really any team, because especially when they're moving to England and just the Premier League, the fans can just be unbearable in terms of the scrutiny they immediately put on the players after one bad performance. So God forbid he came and then didn't have a first good two games. That's a mess I don't want to deal with. So I love the part that he's on loan until the end of the season. Then conversely, also for Dortmund fans, they're in such a good season right now and they need all the artillery they can get. So I think it works for all parties that he's not coming until the summer. Now, overall, on a whole, David, I'm not going to lie. I didn't love the deal. And I didn't love the deal because Christian Pulisic is a good player, and I still think he can be maybe even a very good player. He's 20 years old, so much experience, a lot of talent. But David, you know this. He is partly such a big name because he is very clearly the best player right now for the United States of America. I mean, he clearly is. You even have U.S. legends, and I kind of put that in quotes, but people like Donovan and Taylor Twellman completely saying that he might be the most talented player they've ever had. So because of what he means to the United States of America, his name is just so much bigger than it would be if he represented England or Spain. He really would just be another youngster, part of maybe a nice crop of youngsters. So I do feel like the name is a little bit inflated. But with that said, David, when somebody is 20 years old and they already have years of experience at the top level, you can't hate it too much. And I will tie this in for Calcio fans to Maurizio Sarri. Maurizio Sarri has always said he views himself as a coach before a manager, meaning whatever players you have for him, he will coach them to the best of his ability. And I do think Pulisic is a player that could really improve and potentially shine under Maurizio Sarri. I think Sarri with his right wingers versus left wingers wants something a little bit different. Napoli fans absolutely know that with Lorenzo Insigne versus Jose Callejon. And I do think Pulisic does profile quite well as a right winger in a Maurizio Sarri system. He'll need to be good like Callejon was with off-ball runs. He'll need to be definitely a hard presser, a hard worker, but I think he definitely has that work ethic in him. So what I don't love about the deal, David, to kind of summarize it, is I do feel he's a little bit overrated just because of his name. However, what I do love is there's a lot of projectability, there's a lot of potential, and he's with the right manager in Maurizio Sarri. So I'm warming up to it as each day goes on, I could say, David.
Yeah, so one thing that I was asked, you know, I saw, you know, as usual, when there's a big signing for a huge transfer fee, there's the usual debates. Is it overpaid? Can we pay with this, with shirt sales and all that? Like, we see these same debates, like the names of the players change, the debates stay the same. As I always say with transfer fees, to me, it's very simple. They only matter if a player flops, or if by overspending to acquire one player, a club is then unable to address another need. So that remains to be seen what happens with Pulisic. Now, as far as clubs and shirt deals and what pays what, you know, I always see people making blanket statements. They don't matter. No club has that. But look, different clubs have different agreements with their sponsors. Some of them say, you know, up until this point, we don't get anything, but you sell X amount, we get a bonus. That's the way Juve has their deal with Adidas, with the Ronaldo stuff. Now, I think, you know, here in the U.S., if people that aren't living here might not understand like how much of a positive impact this has, not just for Chelsea, but I'd say the Premier League as a whole. As you said, there's a lot of hype on Pulisic within the American media, but also NBC Sports with this unbelievable broadcasting of the Premier League here in the United States. I mean, their coverage, I've lived in different countries in the world. I've never seen a league covered as well as that. They have to be thrilled with this. And I think there's going to be some big advantages. You know, a lot of people tweeted me too, well, you know, doesn't everyone in the United States already have a favorite team? How does this move the needle with Chelsea? I look at it more as like a sport, more than a specific team. Like here in the U.S., soccer, as it's called here, is really coming up. But compared to, say, the NFL and the NBA, I mean, we're light years behind it. It's making some really good in-ground, you know, what I'd say baseball, to a lesser extent hockey, especially baseball, I think, between, you know, how long the games are. I know, Alex, you're one of the very few people who's considerably younger than me who still loves it. But I think this is a good move for that. You know, in general, I would say that there aren't that many players that move the needle marketing-wise. Of course, we have Ronaldo, Messi, Mbappe now, Neymar. There's probably not that many more. But then it really depends on the market that you're in. And I think Pulisic will have a big impact there. So let's see what happens. So now let's turn it into, you know, talk about, compare it to Roma. You know, Alex, one thing that really stood out to me on the coverage of the transfer on Twitter was, you know, people tweeting the list of players that Dortmund sold and made huge profits on. And I never saw anyone refer to them as a supermarket. I saw them always being referred as like, look at how shrewd they are, how smart they are. So I have to ask you, you know, do you see a huge difference between what Dortmund has been doing in recent years and, say, Roma?
Huge difference? I'm not sure about huge difference, but they are better in that category right now. In fact, Dortmund might be the best in Europe's top five leagues in the business category currently. And I'm pretty much basing that solely off what they've done with three players. Let's start with Ousmane Dembele, currently at Barcelona, having a great season. Last year was a little bit rough, kind of a transitional year for him, first year in La Liga at Barca. But BVB, Dortmund, got Ousmane Dembele from Rennes in Ligue 1, not even a top Ligue 1 side. They bought him for £13 million. A year later, they sell him to Barcelona for £135.5 million. That is remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. And did they replace him? Yeah, they kind of did. Not with one player, but with a handful of players. Guerrero, Larsson, Jadon Sancho, Pulisic himself. So they've done remarkably well selling and replacing Ousmane Dembele and buying. And then how about Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang? Similar. They got him from Saint-Étienne, not a top Ligue 1 side. They bought him for £11.7 million. Then they sold him last year to Arsenal for £56 million. Remarkable again. And did they replace him? Well, actually, they kind of did. Paco Alcacer is having a phenomenal year for Dortmund, banging in goals. No, he's not the same name as Aubameyang, but he's really being productive. So very good again from Borussia Dortmund. And now, Christian Pulisic, they technically got him on a free transfer when he was 16 years old, living in Hershey, Pennsylvania. They get him on a free, and they just sold him to Chelsea for £58 million, and he's a bench player this year. That is exquisite business. And all the while, how are they doing in the standings? Oh, they're only number one right now in the standings in the Bundesliga and still competing in the Champions League as well. So, David, I am incredibly, incredibly impressed with what Borussia Dortmund has done on the business side of things.
Okay, you convinced me. I definitely think they do have an advantage on Roma. But there are a couple of things I do want to bring up. It's not like Dortmund has won anything significant in recent years. Despite all this, they don't have the financial fair play issues that Roma's current management inherited. So to me, it like Roma was basically forced to sell Salah. They had a hard deadline. They probably could have negotiated a higher price without it. So that's definitely an issue. And as you mentioned, Dortmund is doing really well this season, but this probably has more, and I'm no Bundesliga expert, but I have a feeling this has much more to do with Bayern having a decline. So to me, you know, I always say, you know, when people bring up, oh, this person never won anything, it's like, well, okay, well, what was their competition? Like, you know, a lot of people brought this up about Sarri last year, especially. It's like, well, you know, there's a juggernaut like Juve who just isn't letting down. But you did raise some good points. I still think there is a pretty fine line between being called shrewd and a supermarket, but you convinced me a little bit. I can see how Dortmund could be considered closer to being shrewd. But keep in mind, Roma in this time frame recently, they have made a Champions League semifinal. They broke their point record in a single season twice. They just happened to go up against a great Juve. And speaking of greatness, our listeners always deliver with fantastic questions for our podcast. So today we are focusing on transfers. We have a great pop culture question that I've been thinking a lot about and that I want our listeners to weigh in. So Alex, which ones are we going to go over today?
All right. I'm kind of salivating reading this question, David. Could Koulibaly sign with Chelsea now and stay at Napoli until the end of the season like Christian Pulisic?
I think people got really, your brethren there on Chelsea Twitter got pretty excited. And I think, you know, I've been asked nonstop about Koulibaly, and the answer is really simple. Like in January, I would be absolutely floored if he's sold. Same for Skriniar. But people are trying to get me on the technicality. So they're like, wait a second. Yeah, he can't stay at Napoli the rest of the season. What if we just pull a Pulisic deal? Now, for one, you know, these are different players. Pulisic is much younger. Makes sense for him to play. So that's part of the issue there. Koulibaly is a veteran. And Napoli, look, you know, talk about not being a supermarket. Really, Napoli are in a supermarket. The only really two significant players they've sold in recent years, and I use the word sold, is Cavani and Jorginho. Of course, Higuain, but he had an exit clause that nobody thought anyone in their right mind would pay. And maybe now Juve, that deal doesn't look as great now that, you know, Higuain such a big future liability. So, no, I don't see it. Napoli would Napoli are very proud people. I could never imagine De Laurentiis agreeing to this being public and out there. And then on the other hand, quite frankly, I have a hard time believing that Ancelotti would have agreed to come to Napoli without having some sort of guarantee that the key players would stay for a little while. Look, a lot can change in the summer. Koulibaly is now right smack in the prime of his career. I think in the summer, if there ever was a time to sell, there's probably no better time than this summer. Let's see what happens. I think in January, there's no formula that he's gone. If I had to bet now, I think he stays next season too. But look, as we know with transfers, things can change very rapidly. So nice try with that question, but I still don't see it.
Too good to be true. All right, next Twitter question. David, would selling Papu Gomez in January be a devastating event for Atalanta?
You know, Alex, there's people that listen to the podcast know that I try never to overrate prospects because I feel like, you know, they're a blank canvas. We can project whatever we want on them. For every Donnarumma, there are 30 mess stores. But the other thing that's kind of like my pet peeve are like veteran players who are, you know, well-known brands. I think once they start declining, it can take like a year or two for the general public to understand that those players are on the decline. We've talked of two of them on the podcast a lot in 2018. Those are Hamsik and Nainggolan. And I hate to say it, I think Papu Gomez is kind of falling in that category. He's very popular. He's great on social media. Everyone knows the Papu dance, his captain's armband. But he hasn't been that great this season. As a matter of fact, if I was Atalanta, I would just start Duvan Zapata and Ilicic and let them figure it out. I know they're a little bit different than Papu Gomez, but I do think those two complement each other well. They also have prospect Barrow, who I like a lot, who last season was good. They still have Rigoni, who arrived late in the summer transfer window. He could leave, but they've already made an inquiry for Caprari on Sampdoria. And the other thing too, if you're Atalanta, Papu Gomez, yeah, he's their highest paid player ever, I think. Definitely the highest paid player on the team now. But, you know, if he can go play in the Middle East or in China for huge wages. You know, also for him, you know, he's probably been underpaid for his level of quality the past few years. It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. So I think that says a lot about how shrewd and how well Atalanta has been managed, that, in my opinion, they could survive just fine if he leaves.
All right, David, how about this one? Do Milan have a realistic chance to get your boy Milinkovic-Savic in the winter window?
I'm very tempted, Alex, to go on a rant on this absurd idea that Di Marzio knows nothing about Milan, but I won't because he doesn't need me to defend him. But that really, really makes me laugh. I think it's so much easier to idolize these false prophets that tell you wanna hear, link Milan to these big names. They're very popular until the big name doesn't arrive, but then the next transfer window arrives, they become popular again. And it's like, wait a second, well, look back at what happened last summer. So speaking of last summer, if you remember, Alex, we talked about this in late August, and my take was very simple. You know, why would Lazio, a team who notoriously is very tough to deal with, only sells players on their terms, why would they sell Milinkovic-Savic to a Serie A rival on a loan with option to buy deal, and especially reinforce a team that's contending for them for a Champions League spot? It never really made any sense to me in the summer. And I would say now it's even more unlikely for two reasons. A, because since then, Lazio gave Milinkovic-Savic a big extension. Some people may remember a few years back during the January winter, Lazio sold Hernanes to Inter, but the situation was different. He had an expiring contract. He was an older player. His value was only going to go down. Milinkovic-Savic, that's not the case. And the other thing, although he's been better recently, I think selling Milinkovic-Savic right now, you're probably selling low. I think you're much better off seeing what he does the rest of the season. And finally, Lazio and Milan are neck and neck right now. Milan has big financial fair play issues. I just don't see why Lotito would agree to this on a loan. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And look, you know, I was skeptical on Ronaldo to Juve till the day it happens. Maybe I'll be wrong here too, but I honestly just don't see it.
All right, fair enough. Hey, he did get a Team of the Week card in FIFA this week, Milinkovic-Savic. Congrats to him. David, staying on Milan, should Milan consider sacrificing Frank Kessié to buy Bakayoko outright?
So I want to give a huge shout out to our friend Alessandro Iagobone, who we've had on a while back last year. I want to bring him back on. He's based in Italy, covers a lot on Milan. And he, you know, was, as far as I know, the first to tweet about the links of Premier League clubs. And one of them is Chelsea, the other is Arsenal, on the interest on Kessié. Now, we haven't had that on Di Marzio's side yet, but a lot of other good journalists in Italy are talking about it. So shout out to Alessandro there. And this one's pretty interesting to me because Milan have made it very clear that both Higuain and Bakayoko, like them being able to use the options to buy them, are pretty much tied to them making the Champions League now that they have these financial fair play components. But I would start thinking, and this isn't going to happen in January. I doubt Kessié moves in January. But in the summer, like if I was Milan, say they don't make the Champions League, or even if they do, if you had the choice, you know, okay, we sell Kessié for a big profit and then we get the option on Bakayoko. Of those two players, I have to be honest, I'd rather have Bakayoko. And I like Kessié quite a bit. He's been a warrior, hasn't missed matches for Milan. Been, I would say, one of the best players that Mirabelli and Fassone brought in. You know, he does have some limits. I could see him doing well in the Premier League. So push comes to shove, if I had to say, you know, could I have just one of the two, I'd rather have Bakayoko. And I think Kessié would do quite well. He's been linked to Arsenal and Chelsea. I heard there's also rumors of China. But he's so young that I doubt he wants to do that. So let's keep an eye on that. I'd be very surprised if Kessié leaves in January. Milan just needs all the help they can get for the Champions League spot. But this is one definitely to keep an eye on.
All right, David, here's one. What would Cengiz Under bring to Arsenal?
So it seems to me that Arsenal are so thrilled with what happened with Torreira that they're targeting all the short players in Serie A. Barella has been a player they've looked at. Manchester United are also on Barella. So are all the top clubs in Italy. pretty much. And Under kind of falls in that category. And now I have to say, I thought Under was much better last season. Like, he just burst on the scene the second half of the season. Maybe Serie A coaches were a little bit surprised, and now they know him a little bit better. He hasn't been as good, but lucky for Roma, he has had some pretty brilliant goals. And one of them happened at a time that there was an Arsenal scout in the standings watching him. So, you know, you're going to get, if he goes to Arsenal or any other team, you're going to get like really good pace. He's a good dribbler, has a cannon for a shot. So an intriguing player. I definitely think he has upside. But if you're thinking you're getting the new Salah with Sengis Under, I would maybe, you know, lower my expectations a little bit.
Fair enough. Also got a Team of the Week card in FIFA land. David, considering that Arsenal sold Alexis Sanchez rather than losing him for free, what are the odds Aaron Ramsey joins Juventus in January?
Yeah, so as it stands now, I see pretty much almost everyone's tweeting this. Romeo Agresti, a lot of people are really plugged in to Juve. Di Marzio's been talking about it. At this point, it feels like really inevitable that Ramsey's going to be at Juve for considerable wages. I'm going to go here on my quick rant. Anyone who calls this a free transfer just doesn't know how transfers work. I laugh so hard when people, you know, do the tweet when they add up the expenditures and the sales on transfer fee to see the exposure of a club during a transfer window. If you do that, you just don't understand how it works. But that aside, let's look at, you know, Ramsey going to Juve in the summer. Could they try to bring him in early? And the listener makes a good point. Arsenal had the same situation with Alexis Sanchez, and they actually sold it to a team in the league. In a way, it would be easier to sell him abroad. Now, you know, I take any quote on transfers with a grain of salt, but Arsenal's coach said, look, we're keeping him till the end of the season, then he can do what he wants. To me, you know, Arsenal, I think, got Lacazette right away to replace Alexis Sanchez. I don't know if they could do that again. I have a feeling this is going to be more like Emre Can, where Juve did the same. They agreed with him. They tried to get him early, and Liverpool wouldn't budge. If I had to guess, this is how it's going to play out. But let's see what happens there.
All right, how about this? After following in Bayern's footsteps in recent years, do you see Juventus changing direction and being more like Real Madrid with Galactico signings?
Okay, so while we're on the topic of Juve, and we kind of hinted at this on a previous podcast that there was some really cool news coming on Juve's social media. Someone that I know fairly well through Twitter, I never had the pleasure of meeting her, and this is Rossella Marai, who is based in South Africa. She's going to be Juve's new social media manager for English language. So huge kudos to her. Really deserves it. I'm thrilled anyone that works hard and treats people with dignity and respect that get this opportunity. So congratulations to her, and also congratulations to Juve. I think she really checks all the boxes for what Juve need. But back to the philosophy on them. And this is an interesting scenario, because to me, the Ronaldo signing really changed the way we perceive Juve, and for good reason. So Juve did follow the Bayern, you know, philosophy in a lot of ways. They wanted to build up their revenues, didn't want to expose themselves to huge transfer fees like Bayern Munich, didn't like getting into bidding wars. But I think Juve was like, you know what, if we need to bridge the gap revenue-wise with the big boys, we need to make a huge splash. So to be honest, I see this more like everything that Juve is doing, not so much Real Madrid, because if you know anything about Juve, they are all that no one's bigger than the club. Like, think of like Ronaldo's introduction at Juve. They didn't do the stadium. They didn't have him, you know, have all the fans come in, have him do some dribbles in the stadium and whatnot. They just did a standard presentation. Like, that's the Juve way. But I think this is a little bit more of the MO that Juve had when Moggi was the director, and Andrea Agnelli, Juve's president, you know, knows that era really, really well. Like, Moggi got a lot of stars, but he also was not afraid to sell players. Basically, Juve's philosophy is, we're going to make changes before we're forced to make them, be a little bit ahead of that. And Moggi used to do that all the time with players. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see that. Yeah, Juve is going to get some big names. Also, wouldn't be surprised if they move on from some other big names. I've been getting a lot of questions on, did Marotta leave Juve over disagreement with Ronaldo? I think that's a very minor part. More than that, I see it more as, look, Marotta was very in tune with the market within Italy. Juve wanted to be more international. But a much bigger factor is age. You look at all the directors that Juve elevated alongside Paratici. they're all in their early 40s. Like Juve has a plan through 2023. This is really the cycle they want to open. Marotta is in his early 60s. It just didn't make much sense that wise. I wouldn't read too much more into it. I definitely think there's maybe a little bit on the philosophy and Italian versus international market, but I think age was a much bigger factor.
Okay. Well, it was inevitable. We were going to talk about this player. How many times has Icardi signed a new contract with Inter? Feels like it happens every year.
Well, yeah, it's a good point. He's actually done that twice already. He's gotten two extension with raises. And I think, you know, his wife agent, Wanda Nara, gets a lot of nasty tweets, made fun of a lot. But I have to say, I think she's done a really good job. If she wasn't a female and a female that looks like her and that tweets the stuff that she does in her style, I think she'd be getting a lot more respect as just an agent. She's always leveraged very well the interest of other teams to get Icardi raises. And I think Icardi right now, when you look at the landscape in Serie A with Ronaldo coming in, the Dybalas, the Bonucci and whatnot, he's pretty much underpaid. He should be at least at 8 million net. And when I say 8 million, this is after taxes. In Serie A, we report wages after taxes. So 16 million gross, which is how most other leagues report it. So I think she deserves a lot of credit there. I have a feeling he's going to sign another extension there, the third one. But guess what? I think his performance is absolutely warranted. Sure, Wanda can be pretty interesting, like, you know, with the Instagram post with like a zebra trying to like throw Juve in the mix. But guess what? In the end, it's effective. And agents do stuff like that, you know, maybe not in that fashion, but in similar ways with statements and quotes and leaking info. So I think she deserves more credit than she's getting.
I drank some Icardi red wine, I kid you not, last night just to channel him to Chelsea. He seems like the number one unrealistic target for Chelsea fans. He really does. So, David, we haven't talked about this player in a while. Do you think Sebastian Giovinco should return to Serie A in 2019?
It's a great question. Now, I know Giovinco was in Turin recently, visited Juve. Maybe this is what spurred the question. But look, you know, and we've talked about it in a lot of ways. A lot of times, you know, I think with footballers, we look at them as just athletes. We use them in FIFA and fans are like, oh, this guy would be a great fit here. And look, you know, being an MLS has cost Giovinco an opportunity on the Italian national team, although Mancini has selected him recently. But when I think of like a life choice, he has the world's his oyster in Toronto. They adore him there. He's paid well. He really loves living there. He has a young son who has spent the past few years there. So I think as a life choice, I'd be very surprised if he leaves. Toronto's been a good team and all. I just think it's worked out really well. Look, there's a lot of people in Italy that aren't professional athletes that love moving to North America. And I think the footballing aside, and I have to say, I think Giovinco's been surprised in a positive way. It's probably been a little bit better than he expected. But as a life choice, I think he's very happy there. And I'd be surprised if he leaves.
All right. Last Twitter question. Let's move away from football. If Netflix remade The Godfather as a miniseries, who would you cast as Michael and Vito Corleone?
Love this question. We after the Mr. Bungle question to end the year, this is a great question to start the year. And we were talking to you about, you know, classic movies being remade as Netflix miniseries or seasons. And actually, I think The Godfather would be pretty intriguing as a series. So I've been thinking a lot about the casting. I think the Vito Corleone is so easy. It's clearly Robert De Niro. And the reason I say that is in The Godfather 2, Robert De Niro played a young Vito Corleone, and he was basically doing a Brando impression, and it was just an absolutely incredible role. So I think it'd be fantastic if De Niro now did the old version of Vito Corleone. But this time, what I'd like for him to do is, and I think it totally made sense that in the context of The Godfather 2, that he would kind of play up young Vito doing an imitation of what Brando did in the first, that he just do the role the way he envisions it. So to me, that's an absolute no-brainer. De Niro has to play Vito. And look, De Niro hasn't had many great roles in recent years. This one would be really good. Now, Michael is much, much harder. And the reason I say that is there's right now we kind of have a lack of like young, great movie stars. And also this is tough because the Michael role is the most challenging to me in the Godfather universe because he starts off as a clean cut guy who's in the military, doesn't want a life of crime for himself. And then he just evolves into a ruthless Don. So you would need someone that has like a lot of range. So my first, my gut reaction, and this probably was more to do with age and thinking of someone that played a younger mobster, my first inclination was Michael Imperioli, who played Christopher in Sopranos. And I thought he was a pretty good actor there, but I don't think he has the chops to pull off that role. So to me, the other three that I had in mind, and the first one was Johnny Depp. And, you know, he did Donnie Brasco, and he also played Whitey Bulger in another movie. I think Johnny Depp's maybe a little bit too old for this now. He comes with a lot of baggage too, so I'm not sure if he could do it. So the other that come to mind are Ryan Gosling, up and coming actor, you know, doesn't have the dark hair, but that's easy to fix. I could see Ed Norton being really, really good at this. And also Ed Norton, kind of like De Niro, hasn't had a good role in a while. But my ideal pick is Joaquin Phoenix. So I think is right now he's the new Daniel Day-Lewis. I think he's probably the best actor in the game if Daniel Day-Lewis is really serious about retiring. So those are mine. I've been putting a lot of thought into this. So I'm curious to see what our listeners think. I feel like I'm forgetting a very obvious one. So, Alex, I wanted to tell you a story that happened in my office yesterday. So as you guys know, I have a day job in finance. And I work, you know, with people of different ages and whatnot. I'm old, but I sometimes work with people that are older than me. And this colleague of mine, who I like a lot, was complaining a lot about his shoulder. And, you know, he's had surgeries, tried a lot of pain medications, and he really just can't move his shoulder. So I told him, I was like, Rob, you should really try a CBD oil. Like, if you rub it on there, I think it'll really work. And he was like, really? And I was like, yeah, just try it. So I gave him a sample from our great friends at BioCBD Plus last night. And, you know, it's a completely legal product. I had no reservations bringing it into my office and giving it to him. So I gave it to him last night. And today I come back into the office and he comes by my desk like so excited. And he goes, David, I can't believe it. He goes, I thought you were out of your mind when you suggested this to me. But he goes, it really works. I was able to sleep well. I have a much wider range of motion. So guys, you know, I don't, you know, promote stuff that I don't believe in. This company, BioCBD Plus, has been really good to me. But someone else tried it, and this is a legit story. He's been telling a lot of people in the office about it. So, Alex, I know you use this product too. Are there other things that stand out to you about how people can use BioCBD Plus?
Well, yeah, I'm glad you had touched on inflammation before, because boy, does it work with inflammation, getting so many positive reviews that it's working with inflammation, pain, anxiety, etc. But I want to talk about their actual product, not the CBD that's the meat and potatoes that obviously is extraordinary and works. But no, take their vape pen, for instance. It is so easy to use. It is so self-explanatory. It's not fraudulent or it doesn't malfunction all the time. Nope, it is a perfect product. You get the vape pen in this little rectangular box. You open it up. There's the pen. There's the cartridge. There's the charger. You twist the cartridge onto the pen, click it on a couple times to turn it on, and boom, voila, use it. It works. It's not one of these things that looks great on the internet, but then you get it and it's like, what am I doing? And you have to read this big instructional manual. Nope. So easy to use. So self-explanatory. And it's all about how easy and convenient it is. And all of their products are that way. They're easy, convenient, and effective. It's not one of these things that when you take the vape pen, you have to then look at your watch and count down the hours until it works. Nope. It is instantly helping you, giving you relief, giving you calmness, whatever you desire. There really are just so many benefits. So we can't stress it enough. Go to biocbdplus.com and use our discount code to get yourself 15% off any of their products. Our discount code is CalchoLand15, all lowercase, CalchoLand15. This is something, we keep saying it, but this is something that David and I are actively using in our life and really feeling good about it and benefiting from it. So CalchoLand15 is our discount code, and you can find our friends at biocbdplus.com.